My feeling right now is that I wonder how long we could keep the silence going. So we have a month here at C3 where we're going to talk about silence, which is kind of ironic. So I thought we'd just begin with a little. And here's the question I want to ask today. The question is something like this. Why do we need silence? Kind of from a, I don't know if the right word is spiritual, but I'll use that for now. From a spiritual point of view, why do we need silence? What's its value? Or let's put it in more relational terms. Why do we need a relationship with silence? Why talk about it for a month? Those are the questions I want to kind of, that's the question or some variation of that. Just, I want it to kind of hover in the background of, you know, my talk today. And I want you to, I'm going to invite you on a challenge. And the challenge is to try to answer, what is your relationship like with silence? And to bring some consciousness to it over the next month. And I'll try to lay out some, like, a case for it. That's what I'll try to do today. I'm going to argue using words why we should not use words. Or that wordlessness has a place. And I woke up this morning and I thought of something. I thought of an old teaching. This was literally the first thing that came into my head when I woke up. And it was a line from Jesus. And this was the line. He said something like this. When you pray, don't go on and on like the pagans. I know pagan sounds kind of like a put down, but I don't think it was then. It was more like, I think what he meant was Gentiles, something like that. Don't go on and on. Because they think they will be heard by their many words. That's a funny thing. When you pray, don't go on and on, thinking you'll be heard with your many words. Instead, go into your room and shut the door. That's what he says. Instead, go into your room and shut the door. And of course, all Christians from that time on did the opposite, you know. It's funny, like, our relationship with words and what we think is happening when we're using them. And of course, it should be said, it's part of what makes us innately and deeply human, our relationship with words. After all, the series over the last year has been called 12 Words for 12 Months. And we all thought, that sounds like a good idea to talk about words. Or if you thought it was a bad idea, you're still here. So it's, you know, it's how we come to know who we are in part. What does it mean to be a human being? Who am I? We use words to figure that out. And I just think that sort of little teaching of Jesus is odd. Like, he's basically saying, if I could paraphrase, don't go on and on. Shut your mouth. It's kind of odd advice. So It digs around in the question of what is our relationship with the absence of words, silence. And it's certainly a kind of spiritual discipline, might be the right word, in all kinds of traditions. You can even take vows of silence in Buddhism and in certain expressions of Christianity. There are whole monastic orders that don't speak. I'm sure only introverts are part of the order, you can imagine. We don't know. That's an odd thing. Why would you do that? So it's the, and I'm being, you know, I'm just being silly with the introvert, extrovert thing, but I think it's probably worth saying that we live in a very extroverted culture, a very verbal culture. a very noisy culture, and often we think everything will be clarified if we just add to the noise more and more and more and more. And there's not a lot of value around subtraction or getting quiet or stillness or much less silence. In fact, I think we're kind of terrified of silence. I mean, how many of you were slightly uncomfortable when we were just sitting here? Or were thinking, how long is this going to go on? Anyone? Okay, yeah. I could have made it easier by saying we're going to sit here in silence, but I didn't want to make it any easier. And I honestly was wondering if we could sit here for a half an hour. I mean, at what point would you say, would you just get up? Like, what am I doing here? Anyway, I think culturally, we have a hard time with silence. We have a hard time with the absence of noise of various kinds. We even, at night, many of us need noisemakers to sleep. That's interesting to me, you know? I like the ones that are like the sounds of the jungle and things like that. I don't know how that, why do, I mean, you'd think from an evolutionary point of view, if there were sounds of the jungle, you would not be able to sleep. It'd be like a panther is going to eat me any moment. But we seem to have a kind of craving for noise. And I'm going to say something, and I don't mean to put anyone down that has a boat, but boats are very loud. Have you noticed this? Especially, I'm not talking about sailboats. They can be kind of quiet. But when you're on a boat, you're like, oh, this is fun. I'm on a boat. But it's like, like, this is great. Aren't we having a great time? What? Great time. It's an odd thing. It's an odd thing. They even have these boats that are very long. I see them out on the horizon, and you can hear them for miles. And I'm just imagining dollar signs flying out the back as they're moving, you know? I'm not even putting that down. I just think, why do we love that stuff? Why is that not terrifying, going 50 miles an hour and not being able to hear? Why is that not terrifying? But if you were on a raft out that far on the lake by yourself alone, you would be really scared, I imagine. It'd be too quiet. So anyway, I'm poking around in our relationship here with silence. So again, my question, why do we need silence from a spiritual point of view? That's kind of my question. And I have like maybe four things I want to say here. Here's the first one. This is a quotation from Jung. He said, "We don't have ideas, ideas have us." We don't have ideas, ideas have us. And what he means, I think, is that we can be possessed. That's probably the strongest way of putting it, with ideas. We would call that ideological possession, if you want. And have you ever been around someone and you thought, I mean, of course not you, but someone else, and thought, this person is just like a mouthpiece. They're just talking. Do you know what I'm talking about? And you start to wonder, who's the one speaking here? Who's the one speaking? What's this flood of... Well, what Jung is saying is that we're all prone to this. We're all prone to get possessed by ideas. And actually, 2020 and 2021 is a very good example of our own potentiality to get possessed by ideas and to be taken by them. Tell me at a certain point over the last year, especially during the election, you weren't taken by certain things, taken over. And what happens when we get like that is we get very certain, and it's got to be this. And whenever fear or uncertainty is actually present in the culture, it amps up our capacity to get taken by ideas. So I'm just saying that. Ideas, they can take us over. And I'm not saying, I should put it directly about what I am saying. Nobody gets out of it. I don't care if you're like on the left or the right, or if there's some other version, we're just prone, because it's maybe just part of being a human being. We're taken by ideas. Now, why am I saying that? Because one antidote is silence. One antidote is just being quiet. Now, I'm going to argue my case even more strongly. And this is something I keep picking on, but it keeps surprising me how effective it is. And that is the algorithm. Okay? So on your little handheld devices or on your home computer, every single thing, you've heard me say this before, but I just want to repeat it. Every single thing, everything you look up, Google, click on, and now even pause while you're scrolling. So I'm scrolling along, and I happen to pause at a funny video of someone falling down off a chairlift, you know. I just happened to pause. I didn't click on anything, I just paused. All that activity is mined for data. Everything. And I don't care if you went and bought some like special program to protect you, it doesn't work. Algorithms collect data. That's all they do. They mine you and they find out your tastes and proclivities. That's their full-time job. And they never sleep and they never rest. In the old world, people used to be afraid of like ghosts or demons, all right? The algorithm is the ghost, it's the demon. And it never sleeps and it never stops. It's just mining you constantly. What's this person's behavior like? What's this person's behavior like? They like funny videos of people falling off chairlifts. So guess what I have in store for them? More funny videos. Like, amazing. How does it work? And now that's a silly example, but when I say everything, I mean everything. Every single news item you have ever read goes into the collection of data and spits back at you what it thinks you will like. So let me just quote from Jung again. People do not have ideas, ideas have them. So if we're prone to get possessed by ideas and we carry around in our pockets little devices that constantly feed us exactly what it thinks we want, how immune are we here? How immune are we? How I know, you know, many of you are a lot smarter than me and are well-educated, many of you, and think about yourself as being a thinking person. And you are. But how powerful are you? How rational are you? So, what's my point? My point is, silence is the antidote, is one of the antidotes, to being spoon-fed the same ideas, the same images, the same political positions, the same news articles, the same data points, again and again and again and again and again. There are all kinds of studies about this. Go and read them, and then it will collect data, and they're like, this person likes studies on such and such, and you'll get more of them. So I'm just trying to bring some consciousness to it. This is happening to you. Don't think you're going on the internet like you used to go to the library, and you have sections, and you can just take off what you want and look at it, and you're just free to walk around the library. Like, even the library is a curated place, correct? Well, the internet is even more so, except we just don't know it. We used to think when we typed into Google something that just purely by the power of the God of the internet, we would be given unbiased information back at us. I'm just want the unbiased information here. You know, what is COVID? You know, unbiased information. That does not happen. That world is done. It doesn't exist anymore. It's over. The internet lasted for 5 years like that. And then it just slowly got swallowed up by the machines and the corporations that make money off people. Now, I'm really going on and on about this. What's my point? One antidote is silence. I mean, if I'm going to talk on silence twice, and my main objective this morning is to talk about our relationship with outer things. Next time I want to talk about our relationship with the inner world, but they are related. But I'm just talking about all the external data and stimuli that are flooding us constantly. One antidote is silence. How else are you supposed to even know what you think if all the thinking is being done for you? So guess what Facebook cannot reach into? Your own silence. Just when we were sitting here in silence. Social media is powerless. No Instagram came in and occupied my attention and told me I should be in Jamaica, you know? It's completely powerless. So, what's your relationship like with silence? That's my question when it comes to ideas and ideological possession and being spoon-fed. Okay, here's my second point. And it has to do with why does silence make us uncomfortable? And I'm going to be first very direct. Because it reminds us that we're going to die. This is the view of Kent Dobson. If you Google it, it will not say. Kent Dobson's view is. Why are we uncomfortable with silence? Because we're going to die. We're going to die. One day, no more data inputs. We'll just be completely silent in the earth. And so silence makes us uncomfortable because it's like, what is this place? What is the world? What's happening? And in an extroverted culture, which I mentioned before, I really think our culture is mostly extroverted, it has now cleverly come up with a billion distractions to keep us from facing our own impermanence. Just constant. As long as I'm stimulated, I'm alive. And the second that stops, there's like this creeping thing that comes up. I'm not saying when people experience moments of silence, they think I'm going to die. I think it's happening unconsciously. But I really do think we're so uncomfortable with it, which is another way of saying we're very uncomfortable with death. And I mean, for good reason. I want to stay alive as long as possible. How about you? Okay, so that's part of the human makeup. But I don't think at any point in human history are we as uncomfortable with death as we are right now. It used to be something that was grieved, but also honored. Now it's something to be absolutely terrified by. And we have every kind of magic pill possible to stave it off. So I'm just saying, why don't people want to be silent? Because they're going to die. And I'm saying that because if you want a relationship with silence, it means you have to kind of start a conversation with your own impermanence and mortality. And some of you are better at it than others, and you have things to teach us. Just being silent reminds us, I'm impermanent, and everything is impermanent, and I'm here, and then I'm not. And I think the more we're in dialogue with that, I think the richer our life can be. I mean, that's why my question was, why do we need silence from a spiritual point of view? And from a spiritual point of view, I think, yeah, when we bring consciousness to our own impermanence, I think it helps us sort out our values and what really matters and what am I leaving behind and what is the meaning of my daily interactions with the people I love and the people that I don't love? So try it. Try it as an antidote to the noise. Try some silence. Okay, here's my next point. I went to the, what am I going to say here? Have you ever been to a doctor's office where they have a lot of quotes? or the dentist. The dentist also, they love quotes for some reason. Like quotations on the walls. It's like, wait, why am I thinking about endurance? You know, I want this to end as quickly as possible. I don't need to be sore on wings of endurance or something. But no, but it's funny. Like, I'm bringing that up because we also have a funny relationship with quotations. One of my professors at Hebrew University said, man does not live on quotations alone, which I thought was funny, which I'm quoting to you, which is also kind of funny. But it's like phrases. We love phrases and little catchphrases, and the doctor's office is the worst at collecting them and putting them on posters. And I'm not against that. Like, I just quoted from Jung a few minutes ago. I mean, we need wisdom. We need a wisdom tradition. It's important to pass on words and stories and myths and phrases. But there's also like a kind of craving for it right now. And I think with social media, which shrinks everything down, like Twitter is only a certain number of characters, and Instagram is usually a picture but a few little words, and Facebook posts that do well are not novels, all right? If you typed a novel on there, I'm just going to go ahead and let you in on this, nobody's going to read it, all right? It's just forget about it. But if you say one controversial thing, that will get shared, even if it's false. So in the shrinking down of all things, it brings up again this kind of craving. I know myself by the phrases that I attach myself to, or beliefs. I believe this, I believe that. Because I use this phrase and not that phrase. And so I'm just saying, what is your relationship like with not using phrases? The absence of quotations. When I thought about this, I thought I should try to do my whole teaching this morning without using any quotations, but I failed. Because it's hard. It's hard just to say, what do I think? Because then you have to show up in the world, and you might have to show up and say, I don't know what I think. But I'm going to soar on the wings of endurance during my dental appointment. So, what's your relationship like with quotations and things that you say you believe and repeat, you know? What would it be like to not do that, to practice some silence? And here's the fourth thing I want to say, and this is kind of more of a question. How do we sort through the noise? That's what I'll just call our culture. It's a very noisy place, like the boat I was describing before. It's a very noisy place. Images, news, articles, radio, television, a lot of noise, constant noise. In fact, I don't wonder how many times I've been in this building, and for the first time, I noticed when the air conditioning came on, when we were sitting there in silence. I was like, oh, that's what it sounds like. And it's been here all along, you know, the heating and air conditioning. I've been fairly comfortable the whole time we've been here, so I imagine it's been working, but I never noticed it, because I never sat here quietly. Huh, okay. So how do we sort through all of the noise? And I want to offer two kind of related things that sound very religious in their origin, because they are. And that is fasting and a kind of a related topic, which is the Sabbath. And when I say Sabbath, I mean it in the old Jewish sense of not working on a certain day. All right. So what are ways that we might practice some silence? And I want to think about this month. I really want to challenge you, because I'm trying it. I'll start with the Sabbath, because that's actually something I'm trying. So I was in Yellowstone, as I mentioned, a few weeks ago with my family and traveling around and, you know, seeing places. And it's such a gift to be in such a wild place. And it is a very wild place. I mean, it's a wild place. And something strange I started noticing as we were walking around. And I'm going to be judgmental. I'm trying to bring being judgmental back, okay? I think it's got a bad rap. Like, don't be judgmental. I'm like, wait a minute. Sometimes you want to be judgmental. So in my judgmental self, I noticed that quite a few hikers had headphones on. I thought, that's interesting. I wonder what they're listening to, you know? Are they listening to a podcast about Yellowstone? You know, are they, what is it that they're doing? Are they listening to Britney Spears? It's just, is that, that's what brings the bison to the next level? Is Taylor Swift? You know, what is it exactly? And then I started noticing some people even were carrying little Bluetooth speakers with them and playing music as they were walking around. I mean, on the trail. I'm not talking about they're at the campground, you know, hanging out with their friends. Carrying music around with them as if the bears and the wolves and the bison and the otters are really into, you know, I don't know. I can't even think of an artist right now. Now, if you're like me, you're already judging, okay? That doesn't seem like a good idea. That seems like an impoverished way of experiencing a wild place. I think it's because they're afraid they're going to die. That's my, you know, I didn't stop them and say, you're afraid you're going to die, all right? That's why you're listening to music constantly. But just to face your own impermanence, who am I without a song? Like, who am I? If I were to stand here silently, what would it look like to stand silently in front of an elk? There's no way I want to get near that when I can listen to Justin Bieber, you know? This is an odd thing. Now, I'm using that as an extreme example. That sounds like, oh, I can't believe people would do that. I mean, you've been to the Grand Haven Beach. It seems more permissible at the beach to play music. You see people. What I'm saying is that it's an obsession right now. It's absolutely everywhere. Constant. Something in our ears. Something to fill the space. I don't want to feel any kind of void or absence. I don't want to feel any kind of silence. It's not a good thing. I don't think it's very healthy from a spiritual and psychological point of view. It's not very healthy. So back to my challenge. So I came out of Yellowstone. I was kind of disturbed by this. And I thought, well, what's my relationship like with media? And I'm not a saint. You know, I put my phone over there so it wouldn't buzz in my pocket while I was teaching. Because then I think, who's texting me? You know, so what's my relationship? And the funny thing about the modern world, I mean, I've just kind of gotten used to it, is I get a lot of emails. Do you get a lot of emails? I mean, we don't need to have a competition, like who gets the most emails, but I feel like I get a lot of emails, and half of them are not useful, and of the half that are useful, maybe only half I have to respond to. Still, it never stops, though. It's not like people say, you know, it's the weekend. I'm not going to email Kent, you know. I got an email. It was my birthday yesterday. Happy birthday. Yes, thank you. All right. I got an email from a bank wishing me a happy birthday, and I don't even use the bank anymore. Like, what? Why? Just stop. So I, coming back from Yellowstone, I thought, well, I'm going to do at least try to do something. And so I said from Friday night, like old school Shabbat, from Friday night, sundown, to Saturday, I'm just not going to look. I'm not going to look at my emails. And just see what happens. And the nice thing about you being in Yellowstone is there's no cell phone reception. And my kids were really excited about that. And but when I came out, I didn't miss anything. You know, it's not like, oh, I missed that one tweet 5 days ago. Nobody even knew. It's like gone. What's my point? How can you practice this? With a Sabbath, with a tech break. Remember Casper, he spoke here a few months ago. I talked about the Sabbath, talked about tech break. And so I'm trying it, Friday to Saturday. I'm just not going to look. I'm going to try not to look at any news. I still watch the Olympics, even on Saturday. But beyond that, just know. How was my relationship to my own life? How might it change if I just do this one thing? The other is fasting, and it's related in the same way. Try to fast from stimulation and see what happens. The funny thing about silence is that it is the absolute easiest thing to practice. It's not like, I just don't know how to do it, you know? Yes, you do. Stop talking. Stop talking. Stop the, just turn your phone off. You know, walk outside and sit on the lawn. It's really like mind-blowing how easy it is. So that's my challenge this month. Try to have a relationship with silence in a way that you haven't before. And just see how your relationship to your own life, to the world, to what's meaningful to you, to your values, see what happens. See what starts to change and unfold as you try this little experiment with silence. That's about as much as I want to say right now. I want to do two things here to close, since we have no music. And I want to do another minute of silence. Let's do another minute of silence. And then when that minute or so is up, I'll let you know when it's up. Then we'll end. But I'll ask you to stack the chairs. You can start talking again. And stacks of 10, very important. And the chairs in the middle, that's what we'll use for talk back. You make a little circle here, the rest of the chairs, stacks of 10, will be a big help. And we'll do talk back, I don't know, we'll take like a 5-minute break, something like that, and then come back and gather and see what you think about this morning. So let's end with another few moments of silence.